Welcome to the fourth episode of the NHL Numbers, Friends with Numbers podcast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and I'm joined by Cam Charron. Cam, how's it going?
It's wonderful to be here, as always.
Yeah, a little programming note. In case you guys were tuning in to hear Brian Reynolds from Hockey Wilderness, he's not returning our calls, so he won't be joining us today, but hopefully for episode five, we'll get him on board.
We keep trying to get him on the show.
Yeah, I don't know why. He just doesn't want to talk to us. Yeah. Doesn't seem very friendly. I don't know.
We have a great lineup of guests, though.
Yeah.
All prepared.
Oh, all prepared. Just I don't know how prepared it really is. I mean, we have a list of guests, but yeah, they're not really responding to us.
Guests, so we'd love to have on.
Yeah. So now it's just me and you talking.
Yeah, just friends with numbers.
Yeah, we could we could do worse than just me and you talking, though. So,
yeah.
I think we're gonna start by having a little discussion about Jordan Eberle. And not because he's been very interesting or anything this year, but mostly because we ended last week's episode promising the listeners that we were going to talk about Jordan Eberle. So I'll let you start the discussion.
Well, look at me on your brand new Wi-Fi connection that you have in your apartment now.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking up his numbers on Hockey Reference right now.
Yeah. It's a big upgrade for this podcast. The first couple episodes, we did them without any internet. So
Jordan Eberle, his shooting percentage is 10.3% this year.
Yep. Down from 18.9 last year.
It's very normal.
Mm.
And he's scored 3 goals in 9 games.
Yep.
His shot rate has actually increased at both even strength and on the power play.
Yep.
Actually, no, it's increased at even strength, not on the power play.
Yep.
It's dipped from 3.12 shots per 15 minutes to 2.48 shots per 15 minutes.
Yep.
But only that's small sample.
Yeah, of course.
5-on-5, it's up from 1.76 to over 2 shots per 15 minutes.
Yeah. Well, he's shooting it a lot more. I mean, you can just tell just from the raw numbers. I mean, he's playing more, but
yeah,
I mean, it's a pretty drastic increase. I mean, he had 180 shots on goal last year, and I think he played like almost the full season, if not all 82. This year, he has 29 already in his first like 9 games or something. So,
yeah.
I mean,
he's shooting a bit more. Apparently, he's taking some shots away from Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Taylor Hall, or so they tell me.
Yeah. Well, maybe he just read all the posts about how his shooting percentage was going to regress, so now he's just trying to kind of
he's trying to offset the balance.
Yeah, maybe he just did some reading this summer. I don't know.
Well, his goal rate is down.
Yep.
Yeah, by 25%.
Yeah.
Well, we're 9 games into the season. We're going to make all these bold proclamations about Jordan Eberle.
Yeah, by the time we do this podcast next week, he's going to have like a 2 hat tricks in a row or something like that.
He's never going to have a shooting percentage above 11% ever again.
Bold predictions.
That's based on this. What is it? We're 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah.
His shooting percentage has regressed. Yay! Victory math.
One, what, math 1, Jordan Eberle 0.
I think Jordan Eberle's won a couple times.
Who's keeping score?
He'll come back with a clutch goal in the final game of the season. 5 seconds to go.
Well, he's clutch, man.
To put his shooting percentage above 12 or something.
I don't know. The Oilers this year as a whole group have been pretty interesting.
What have you been thinking? Like, what do you think of them as a team?
I don't know. I don't know if I've watched enough of them to kind of make any bold proclamations, but I guess that's what the show's all about. Just looking at numbers and making wild statements. So
no, but what do you think of the team from what you have seen? You've watched a couple of games.
Yeah, I watched a couple of games, predominantly the ones against the Canucks. And I don't know. They're interesting. I think that, I mean, I don't like when my team's playing against them. Like, they're pretty scary how quickly they turn the puck up from their zone into the attacking zone and just pass it around and quickly get a shot on goal. I mean, it's kind of frightening, the speed, just the general team speed that they have. But I don't know. What do you make of them?
I mean, still unsold. Yeah. A lot of people are giving them some playoff hope. They're fixing playoff hopes on them.
I mean, their back end is shaky at best.
At best.
Yeah.
Jordan Schultz.
There's too many Schultzes on that team. I don't know.
I read it as Jay Schultz.
Yeah, Jay Schultz.
He's pretty dangerous. I like the way he sneaks in from the point. Mm. He clearly plays a brand of game that not many defensemen do, because people seem unprepared for it. They're an interesting team, and they have two really good lines. And I think because the Western Conference just seems, everything's up for grabs in a short season. So I see no reason why Edmonton shouldn't make the playoffs unless, you know, they get a 5-game losing streak in April, which is possible, but I think that they'll be right in the thick of things.
I mean, back to Justin Schultz, like, I dare you to watch an Oilers game, no matter like what channel it's on, whoever's calling the game, mm-hmm. and not hear that person just compare him to like Niedermeyer or Paul Coffey or something.
Rob Niedermeyer.
Yeah.
Comparing Jordan Schultz and Rob Niedermeyer.
Wrong Niedermeyer. No, but I mean like a Paul Coffey reference or something like that. It's just like, let's settle down. He's played less than 10 games.
It's Dougie Hamilton's in that territory too.
Yeah, it's like...
Dougie Hamilton's been compared to...
Can this guy play like 20 games at least? 25, 30 games before we go on these wild comparison streaks? Yeah.
Let's compare them to a Hall of Famer. He's played 9 games.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Rob Niedermeyer is a Hall of Famer.
Well, his brother Scott recently had his number retired. That's by... Right. The Canvas Blazers.
That's right.
Best junior hockey team in all the land.
Yeah, I know you're a fan. All right, well, I think we did our due diligence with the Jordan Eberle discussion. I mean, as we said, it hasn't been that interesting this year. Hopefully he does something that can lead to future discussions about
it. It's like when the Canucks traded Cody Hodgson last year, just for the sake of having something to write about, I wanted Hodgson's shooting percentage to be anywhere but between 2 and 20.
Yeah.
So if he was not scoring at all, it would be funny. Yeah. And if he was scoring a whole bunch based on a high shooting, based on unsustainable percentages, right? That would be hilarious. Yeah. That would be even more hilarious.
Yeah.
And he's doing well this year, but Buffalo's a pretty bad team.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just brought up Buffalo and Cody Hodgson.
Well, I mean, let's keep talking about just random teams. I mean, we don't have anything on the docket particularly for this episode. So, I mean, what's kind of caught your eye around the league in terms of either players or collective teams?
I have Thomas Vanek in a keeper league.
Yeah.
I'm very happy by that.
You're very happy, yeah. Well, I mean, are you looking to sell him off if anyone's willing to buy what he's done so far? Or?
I don't think that I can find,
because I mean, you know, there's like a 2-week stretch coming really soon where like he's gonna appear on milk cartons and people are just gonna be looking for him.
I don't know. I've watched a lot of Sabres games this year.
Yeah.
He's actually really good in all three zones.
He's an exceptional player.
But yeah, he's not a 19 points.
And that's the thing. He sucks you in, because I mean, he did this last year. He's done it all throughout his career, pretty much. Like, It must be so frustrating to watch Sabres games night in and night out, because you just have no idea what you're going to get.
Because you live in Buffalo.
Yeah, well, that too. I mean, not... But, like, he has these stretches where he just looks like the best player in hockey, and then he also has the same stretches where you're just like, wait, he's playing? He's on the ice?
What do you think Thomas Vanek's PDO is?
I'm gonna just by the look on your face, I'm gonna guess that it's unsustainably high.
Give me a number. Ugh. This is being recorded Wednesday afternoon, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know, 1075?
Ooh, no, it's 101.6.
Okay. All right. Well,
so that's within the realm of expectation. However, his on-ice shooting percentage, 18.52%. On-ice save percentage, 83.1%. So both those numbers are going to rebound. Luckily, plus-minus is not a statistic that's being kept in this keeper league of mine.
Yeah, that's good. What's his shooting percentage?
Oh, it's 18.52. His individual one?
Yeah.
I have to go check out.
I'd assume it's pretty high because he has like 9 goals or something.
He has 8 goals. He's shooting 23.5%.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, 34 shots. That's right up with the league leaders.
Yeah. He shoots it a lot, so yeah.
Yeah. He's a good player.
Well,
he single-handedly beat the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, and he didn't even have to fight. Can you believe that?
It's amazing. What do you think? There's two fighters now have sustained concussions recently in fights. Sean Thornton and, what was it, BJ Crombean last night.
Has he officially been labeled with a concussion, or did he just get his bell rung, quote unquote?
Well, he stayed out the rest of the game.
Yeah.
At the,
I'm not surprised. I mean,
well, that was fine. We'll call it an an alleged concussion.
Yeah.
I'm not a doctor.
No.
But it seems everyone seems to be mad at Zach Ronaldo for punching the guy.
Yep.
But isn't the purpose of a hockey fight to hurt the other guy?
It is. I think the thing that people are upset with is kind of, I think we talked about this last week, that kind of code between the players where, like, while you're on your skates and you're fighting, like, you know, all systems go, but then once the guy's down, you kind of back off. You don't keep going at him. And I mean, that was pretty borderline. Crombie was just laying there and he was just kind of wailing on him.
That's it. That's where it's the linesman's job to sort of step in there. And I think that, you know, if they were behind, and you see it a lot in mixed martial arts, if you watch, I don't get my bloodlust from hockey. I get it from mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And if a guy's down on the ground and knocked out,
it's
the guy on top is still going to keep.
It's the fighter's job to keep going until he's told not to.
Until he's told to stop.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what Zach Ronaldo is. He's a fighter.
Yeah, and I've seen that in hockey fights too, where a guy is going to where they're being wrestled to the ice, and one guy's still trying to throw shots until the linesman comes in.
Yeah,
and anyway, I don't think anyone should be all too upset that someone got hurt in a hockey fight.
No.
As if it's not something that's supposed to happen.
I don't think that was even the most eyebrow-raising fight in that game. I mean, I think for me, it was Vinny LeCavalier accepting a fight with Max Talbot with like 7 minutes left when his team was down one. I mean, that was a little more eyebrow-raising to me why he would do that. But
I actually didn't watch that game. I was paying attention.
Of course you didn't. You don't watch games. We've already settled this.
I watched three games yesterday.
Yeah,
I was paying attention to the Maple Leafs and the Capitals.
Oh, what a riveting affair that was.
It always is. Oh, Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
Actually, no. Finish your point about LeCavalier Talbot.
Well, I don't think I really had a point. I just wanted to bring up how kind of stupid that was, and like I don't think enough people were making like a big enough deal about this because it didn't make any sense. But
I think the last fight that I really enjoyed in a hockey game was LeCavalier and Aginla in was it game 3 or 4 of the 0-4 finals.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, because that seemed really genuine. It seemed like those two guys hated each other.
Yeah. It's a little depressing how good Vincent LeCavalier used to be and then the player he is now.
Still sort of is.
He's
had a really good career of being the second best guy on his team.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't want to turn this into Vincent LeCavalier today or anything, but I mean, like, would I be wrong in saying that, like, his career has kind of been a little bit of a disappointment?
Well,
like, just based off of, like,
he's not the Michael Jordan of hockey.
I mean, there's been times where he was just like, especially like back in the day where he was just so dominant and you were just like, this guy could just own the NHL. And then it's kind of just in the past few years, he's kind of been an afterthought. So
he's had 5 30 goal seasons and 13 consecutive 20 goal seasons.
Yep. But I think
he's just a guy who's been so valuable for his team.
His last really dominant season was like 07, pretty much, it looks like.
Yeah, well, that was a huge power play year. So, you know, scoring numbers are.
Well, I mean, he had 5 less power play points the year after and 25 less total
5
points.
Five fewer. Friends with grammar.
And like he still had a pretty drastic drop off. So. I mean, I don't know if you can attribute it totally to just power play.
I saw 92. Well, either way, no, I think Vincent LeCavalier. He was never the best player at his position, but he was always up there.
For some reason, I find myself disappointed by his career as a whole. I just think it could have been so much better. I think I wish we could like rewind the Vincent LeCavalier experience.
Oh.
And keep in mind, he's only 32, so he's still probably going to play for another couple of years. But
yeah. I think he has a bunch, you know.
And he's over a point a game this year, but.
Yeah, he has a few more 20 goal seasons left in him. Yeah. And his team probably won't get market value for his contract, but I think he's brought a lot to that franchise. He really stabilized hockey in the Bay.
Yeah.
He's just been the face of their franchise for so many years, despite never really being the best player on that team. He was. The year they won the Stanley Cup, St. Louis won the MVP, and now Stamkos is regarded as the best player on that team.
Rightfully so, in
the game. And, you know, LeCavalier has just been a player to put up these really good, consistent numbers over many, many years, and I think he'll easily have his number retired by that team. Probably not a Hall of Famer,
yeah.
but what does that achievement even mean these days?
Not much.
These days. That's right. An old timer.
That was a fun little Vincent LeCavalier discussion we just had. Impromptu.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Another name I wanted to bring up, just kind of, I don't even know if there's any point to be made on it, but I was talking to you about it before we started recording, Jamie McGinn.
Lead singer of the Birds.
Has one goal on 28 shots.
You were saying something like 9 posts?
I was watching the Stars Avs on Monday night, and commentator was saying that Jamie McGinn's hit the post 8 times this year.
8 times.
8 times. 28 shots on goal, has one goal to show for his efforts.
Well, he's...
I think that's pretty crazy.
Well, he was traded for Daniel Winnick, right?
Yeah.
They just swapped shooting talents.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a Freaky Friday type of thing. Yeah.
Eventually, they're going to wake up.
Eventually. But, all right, well, let's talk about Phil Kessel now, since you kind of
Phil Kessel.
Started talking about it. I mean, speaking of a lot of shots and very little production to show for it.
Very, very little.
Yeah.
Minimal
at best.
I've watched...
I mean, before you get into Phil Kessel, should the Leafs pursue trading Phil Kessel for Tom Cestito?
No.
But Tom Cestito has 2 more goals than him.
Exactly. And Chris Tanev has 1 more goal than Phil Kessel.
Exactly. And was it clutch.
It was. I was so happy. Yeah.
If you guys want to listen to us talk about Chris Tanev, tune into the Canucks Army podcast. We'll be talking about that in depth there. So
that's pretty much every week for us.
Yeah, pretty much. Phil Kessel.
Phil, I've watched every Leafs game this year, and Phil Kessel has been the most dangerous Leaf on the ice whenever he's on.
Yeah. I mean, that's not very surprising.
In any game, he's the one getting the most shots, creating the most chances.
Yeah.
He's the one carrying the puck the most. He logs the most offensive minutes. And he doesn't have a goal yet. It's funny, there. Every last couple games now, there's just been this one really good chance where you thought, oh, here, against Washington, he came in on a 2-on-1 with James Van Riemsdyk.
Yep.
And the defenseman had backed up and was giving Kessel all kinds of space, because I'm not particularly sure why, but Kessel just took it right to the faceoff circle and whipped it. He has a great wrist shot coming off the rush.
Yeah.
And it just went straight into Michael Neuber's glove.
Yeah.
Is
what you're saying is he made Michael Neuber look good.
Yeah, because I don't think Michael Neuber has the power to make himself look good.
No.
In the game against Carolina a night earlier, in the first period, there was, I think, Tyler Bozak. It might have been Bozak. Just had this perfect cross-crease pass. Yep. Ward was completely out of position.
Yeah.
Kessel just had a wide-open net. And Alexander Semin's stick just tips the puck away about an inch before it gets to Kessel. And he just swung at blank air.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder what's going through his mind.
Yeah.
Is he really... Whenever he goes back to the bench... He just looks angry.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually really funny in the when James Van Riemsdyk scored his first goal. His first goal of the game against Washington.
Yeah, when Neuwirth coughed it up, right?
Yeah, Neuwirth coughed it up, and he had a wraparound. Yeah. Just a wide open net, but Kessel just came streaking in from the wing. He really wanted a pass to the open net, but it was not to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking right now. I mean, he has 42 shots on goal, and he's logging a ton of minutes.
So. Oh, he's playing really good hockey.
Yeah,
and
it's gonna come.
I keep saying it, but I'm just running out of things to
say.
Well,
I mean, he's on pace to never score a goal again. So you got to keep that in mind.
He may never do it again.
No, I think Phil Kessel will be fine. I don't even know if like there's anything more to say. Like, just he's playing well, he's shooting a lot, and eventually the goals will come.
It takes
patience, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's only been, I mean, 10 games. It's must be pretty frustrating for both him and Leafs fans. But
that's
it's quite a bit of like.
It's already like a tenth of the season, or more than that, 12.8% of the season on a full year.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. I think it's going to be one of those like blips in the radar where you look back at it and you're like, hey, remember when Phil Kessel went the first 10 or games or whatever without scoring?
Yeah. This is his longest goalless drought with Toronto. He had a bunch of 6-game stretches, and a lot of goal scorers have looked at their streakiness abilities.
Yeah.
And they do tend to score more goals after games where they have scored. Although I do think that that's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if a goal of a guy is hot,
yeah,
so to speak, his coach will give him more minutes.
Yeah. No, which, I think that's definitely true.
I have no way of quantifying that because we still can't get even strength minutes per game.
All right, let's talk a little bit about teams and kind of zone start deployment because Corey Pronman today tweeted out a link saying Dan Bylsma was using his players kind of like Alain Vigneault has been using his players in the past few years. And then I was looking at behind the net, I was looking at some zone start numbers, and it looks like more teams are kind of early on in the season really radically deploying their like offensive guys really, really high offensive zone start percentages,
yeah,
and their defensive guys really low. And I know last year, I mean, there were very few teams that were kind of like extreme. Like the Canucks were pretty much an anomaly. Do you think that that's going to even out as the season goes on, or do you think this kind of like
it's
happening for a reason?
Well, it's a trend to watch, and the teams that were doing it most last year were Vancouver and then Columbus and Winnipeg.
Yeah, interestingly enough, right?
Well, Scott Arneil and Claude Noel,
yeah,
are they came up through the Canucks farm system,
yep,
coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Carlyle, a little bit, not so much.
Yeah,
and he's brought some aspects of that to Toronto, but he wasn't really with the Moose for too much, or no, for none of the Mike Gillis era, actually. Yep. Yeah, I'm actually looking at Pittsburgh's numbers here. Sidney Crosby's offensive zone start rate is 43%.
Yeah. I noticed the Rangers are really extreme.
The Rangers are pretty, yeah. Malkin's at 72.2.
Yeah. And I mean, so
Vitaly's at 34.4.
I think that kind of, and I think Mike Gillis actually said this like over the summer in an interview, like, I think it all it boils down to pretty much is like you got to have the personnel to do it, right? Like,
yeah,
if you don't have like defensive minded guys and then like offensive minded guys, if you just have like a bunch of like whatever players, like it's not gonna work, and no one's really gonna care.
Yeah, and watching a lot of Leafs games and commenting on a lot of Leafs games
has taken a lot of years off your life.
Not really. It's well, maybe, but I won't miss them.
Yeah.
It's clear that they don't really have the personnel to deploy in the same way, but they still have aspects of that. So Nazem Kadri picks up a lot of offensive zone starts, but that's purely on the road.
Yeah.
At home, Carlisle likes to match up line on line. The other thing that he does is find no way to get his two best defensive centermen, Jay McClement and Dave Steckel, any ice time.
Yeah.
He just, or any face
off. Yeah.
Jay McClement is now playing on a line with Mikhail Grabowski and Nikolai Kuhlman, which is an excellent second line, while Dave Steckel is playing with Colton Orr. So these aren't, that McClement, Grabowski, Kuhlman line is a really good defensive specialty unit, and yeah, they should be getting a lot of defensive zone starts,
mm-hmm,
but they're also seeing some offensive time in just these weird places.
Yeah.
They Carolina ice the puck with their third line on the ice and caught on the ice, and out comes this purely defensive unit, and Carlisle has used that line in some interesting situations so far, and then he'll throw out Steckel and Orr against opposing team first lines at home, and you just, why, buddy?
Come on, bro.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. So, it's obviously a trend worth monitoring, but do you think it's going to last, or do you think that it's going to kind of come back?
Yeah, after, you know, in the first few weeks of the season, it doesn't really count for anything because
yeah,
sometimes these, you know, a low percentage below 50 might mean 7 faceoffs,
yeah,
in the offensive zone versus 8 in the defensive zone.
Yeah.
And that, you know, over time that balances out to some, you know, well, balances back out to 50, but 7 divided by 15, it's what, like 45 or something?
Yeah.
I'm not a human calculator.
Yeah, this isn't friends with calculators.
Yeah.
It's friends with numbers.
Defensive zone face-off wins by centerman. Who's leading the league? Actually, Mikhail Grabowski is,
mm,
interestingly.
So should we just edit out those those last few minutes of Leafs talk.
I will say that Grabowski has seen some offensive zone starts in weird places when he has gotten them.
Yeah.
Mike Fisher is number two, Marcus Kruger number three.
Hmm.
Paul Gosse at four with a great offensive zone start rate of 9.3%.
Hmm.
So getting all kinds of value if you have him on your fantasy pool.
Yeah.
I traded a first round pick in my keeper league for 4 years of Paul Gostad.
Yeah. Well,
and I don't regret that trade.
No.
And if anyone asks me about that trade, I will yell at that reporter.
Yeah, you should. Love me some Paul Gostad. All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for this week's edition of the Friends with Numbers podcast.
Okay.
We'll keep dialing Brian Reynolds. Hopefully he answers one of these days. I think one of us might need to get a new cell phone number.
Yeah, I'll tweet him. Mix it up. I'll tweet him a couple times this week.
Yeah. All right, Cam. People can follow you at Cam Charon. You can follow me at So You're an Expert.
No apostrophe.
Yeah. If you want to go into a rant, if you want to hear a rant about that apostrophe, check out last week's. Check out NHL Numbers, but also check out Leafs Nation where Cam's killing it. Check out Canucks Army.
Where Dim is killing it.
Where I'm trying to kill it. And we'll be back next. Well, recording this Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
We're putting these up on Thursday. So I guess we'll be back next Thursday for you guys.
Yeah. We'll start being able to pump these out weekly.
Yeah. These are fun times.
Very fun.
All right, Cam. It was fun. And we'll talk next week.
All right.